You know who you are?
Steven is my name.
Even Steven.
Will you say something, Steven?
Steven or Else Media.
Captain O.G. Readmore here. If they send a mouse to outer space with Hawaii's getting snow, if a Martian lands on Thompson Street, you'll be the first to know. If you read the daily papers and your favorite magazine, you'll be out in front and in the know on all the latest scenes. You can tell your friends, you heard it first, and you'll hold the latest news. So read the paper and some magazines, because reading is what's news.
From Steven or Else Media, this is Growing Up Geek, episode number 4, the top 5 Saturday morning cartoons, part 2. Hello and welcome to Growing Up Geek, the podcast that's so nostalgic for the past that it sees everything in 8-bit. I'm your host, my name is Steven. And I'll be your pilot on this temporal odyssey through the geek-centric cultural zeitgeist of my youth. From the 70s through the 80s and on into the 90s, we'll explore the movies, the music, the books, the comics, and the TV shows that shaped my childhood and made me, well, me. In our last episode, I sat down with Wayne Cordova of the Flip City podcast to talk about Saturday morning cartoons and to count down each of us our top 5 most favorite Saturday morning cartoons of all time. That conversation was so massively epic that I had no choice but to rip it in half and transform it into 2 separate episodes. And so with that totally logical and moderately succinct explanation complete, how about we carry on with the top 5 Saturday morning cartoons part 2 already in progress. My number 3, so I've had superheroes, sci-fi superheroes with space stars.
Oh, yeah.
Had sword and sorcery, and I'm going to delve into sword and sorcery one more time, but classic sword and sorcery with Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh, man.
Hey, look! The Dungeons and Dragons ride! Wow, neat!
Give me a break.
Ranger, barbarian, magician, thief, cavalier, and acrobat.
And this show ran for 3 seasons on CBS from 83 to 85, 27 episodes. It was created, or it was produced and made by Marvel Productions, along with TSR, or whoever owned Dungeons & Dragons at the time. And Marvel Productions, they also made the G.I. Joe cartoons, Transformers, Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. And there's one element from each one of these cartoons that overlap, and that's the almost overpowering soundtrack that plays throughout every episode. It's different music. G.I. Joe has their own music. Transformers has their own music. You know, it's all different music, but it's so similar in the way that it's just always there. It's just this, you just always, regardless of what's going on.
I faced the same situation on safari once. I was lost. The sun was baking my brains.
So that's what happened to your brains. Shh, then what'd you do, Eric?
Simple. Called Dad on the walkie-talkie and our gardener picked me up in the golf cart.
In Africa?
No, in my backyard.
I feel like you could have Spider-Man and Duke show up in Dungeons and Dragons, and it would feel right. It would, you know, because the look and the feel and the style is all the same. So if you've seen G.I. Joe, if you've seen Transformers, that's what Dungeons and Dragons looks like.
Yes.
And it's a group of kids, Hank, Eric, Sheila, Diana, Presto, and Bobby, a group of kids in modern day at the time, get on a roller coaster, a Dungeons and Dragons roller coaster. And again, it's all spelled out in the opening theme song. And the roller coaster takes off and suddenly they're transported into this world called the Realm. It's the Dungeons and Dragons world. They meet this little dude whose name is the Dungeon Master, and he helps guide them through as they just try to find their way home. There's a couple of big bads in this Dungeons & Dragons world. There's Venger, who's a big red-winged guy who is a big, mighty, evil sorcerer dude. And then there's the five-headed dragon, Tiamat. Each head of the dragon represents one of the five colors of dragons: green, red, black, white, and blue.
It's Tiamat!
And yeah, it was just, I could not get enough of that show. I always gravitated toward Bobby, even though he was the youngest, but he was a barbarian. And each one of them were given by Dungeon Master a magical weapon. Bobby had just a big hunk of wood that was a club, and it could just destroy anything. Hank was the leader, voiced by Willie Ames from Eight Is Enough. Yeah, he was the leader. He had a magical energy bow. It was just a bow without a string. And then he'd mime pulling the string, and suddenly this energy string and an energy arrow would appear out of nowhere, and he'd fire the arrows. Eric was the, what was he? He was the paladin.
Cavalier maybe? Or
something like that. He basically had a magic shield. He was the rich kid. And he was voiced by Donnie Most, Ralph Mouth.
Oh, wow.
From Happy Days. Sheila, I think she was the one that had, she was the thief. She had the cloak that would turn her invisible. Diana was the acrobat. She had a staff and she that would help her flip around and stuff. Presto was the magician, a very inept magician. He was the nerd of the group. He had the glasses and he had a hat, pointy hat, that if he took it off, he could reach into it and pull out magical stuff, kind of like Bullwinkle would just pull out the craziest things out of his hat.
Rabbit out of my hat.
And then, of course, you had Uni, the unicorn, the baby unicorn. It's like all these shows had to have some kind of crazy animal
sidekick.
You
needed a mascot in order to put out a show.
And that was Uni. Yeah, Cavalier. Eric was the Cavalier. That was right. It was Cavalier. But
the show, what I really liked about the show was, again, it's like you had these teen characters, you had these kid characters. Another major trope, like in the 80s, was like kids being transported into another world. You know, it's like you saw that happen with, you know, Dungeons and Dragons, kid video. You know, you get that, you know, that regular, like, oh no, we're doing this normal thing and now we're getting sucked into the world, you know, to this warp. And, but I loved Dungeons and Dragons because I was a Dungeons and Dragons kid. And so, like, I was already into that. And to me, it was like, it was just like a, it was kind of funny because it was like, it was called Dungeons and Dragons. And I always wondered, like, you know, okay, like, when are they going to pull out the dice? When are they going to, you know, they had all the tropes, you know, of everybody kind of, you know, every single class that you could be. And then you had like the dungeon master. But I was always kind of wondering like, okay, like, when are they going to roll for initiative?
Your dungeon master has placed you in a dreadfully precarious position. You're playing the most phenomenal game ever created. Your skin grows cold from your first glimpse of the enormous beast.
It's a product of your imagination.
Survival depends on a quick, decisive move.
Your choices are limited.
Stand and fight, or run.
Use your lightning bolt.
Victory is yours.
Win the treasure.
TSR Hobbies.
Dungeons and Dragons game.
Products of your imagination.
Yeah, I had played Dungeons and Dragons a number of times as a kid. I was not a big role-playing guy, though I did Dungeons and Dragons. There was a Marvel Superheroes role-playing game that we would play. GURPS, Generic Universe Role-Playing Game System. Used to play that with a buddy of mine a lot. But my older brother was huge into Dungeons and Dragons. He had all the books, all the modules, all that stuff. And so if I would play, typically he would Dungeon Master. And, you know, sword and sorcery fantasy genre has been a part of my life for a long time. By this point, by the time this cartoon had come out, I had played Dungeons and Dragons, but I'd also seen Dragon Slayer on HBO. I had seen The Hobbit, the animated Hobbit feature, which just seemed to play on TV every once in a while at random times of the year. And then we're introduced to Dungeons and Dragons in the very, very early 80s maybe even the late 70s. My dad was an air traffic controller, and they had gone on strike. It was a big thing in the news that the union of air traffic controllers across the country went on strike, and they would have to go to these union meetings every once in a while in the evenings. And a couple of times, we as kids were taken to the house of one of my dad's coworkers, who had a son who was about 3 or 4 years older than my older brother, and he introduced us to Dungeons and Dragons. And my older brother just fell in love with it and bought all the stuff and had all the dice and all that junk. And so it was always around in my house. Swords, sorcery, Dungeons and Dragons, whatever, it was always around. And so when the cartoon was announced, it was a no-brainer.
And I feel like that, I mean, like Dungeons and Dragons had, it was one like umbrella with a number of different like mediums. And so it was kind of one of those things where you had like the game, you had the role-playing game. You also had books and novels and stuff where not just like the compendiums where they would, you know, have all the different monsters, but like you also had like just like books, like novels where you could just read. But yeah. Then with this cartoon, it brought a whole different element too, because now like you're the kid, you're getting brought into this adventure, and it was episodic, but it was also, you could catch it. Like you didn't always have to catch it every single week in order to know what was going on. And then, if I'm not mistaken, I remember as a kid there being books about the cartoon, cartoon. I just looked it up too. I was trying to like, you know, it was like, it's called the, like a cartoon show book. And what it was like not a comic book, but it was a comic book made up of stills and frames from the show. And so it was one of those things where you can kind of like flip it. Cause I remember as a comic book kid also knowing like you see Dungeons and Dragons up on the shelf and like that was, you know, that was the other indicator. But yeah, it was a great show. So much fun. And I feel like it made a comeback recently with that new, did you see the Dungeons and Dragons movie? Did you catch their cameo?
Yes, I did. And I about exploded in my seat. I was like, holy crap, it's the freaking guys from the cartoon.
That's just so cool. I got to tell you, we're probably this close to maybe getting an actual revival of that Dungeons and Dragons property.
That would be sweet. That would be sweet. Yeah. The great thing about, one of the great things about the cartoon is, of course, anybody who's played Dungeons and Dragons knows about the book, The Monster Manual.
Yes.
And so the cartoon allowed you to see a lot of the monsters from The Monster Manual come to life. Cause this was the first time you'd see stuff like that, you know, typically if it was a fantasy movie, you'd have a dragon, but you know, you had a beholder in one of the episodes and that was pretty cool. You know, it was a good show. I really enjoyed it. And that's why it made my number three. And it had quite the voice cast. Not only Willie Ames from 8 Is Enough, not only Ralph Mouth from Happy Days, Presto the Magician was voiced by Adam Rich, also from 8 Is Enough. The unicorn, Uni, who just went, rah, rah, that's all Uni ever did, was voiced by Frank Welker, who was Fred on Scooby-Doo, and Megatron on the Transformers. And then Venger was voiced by the legendary Peter Cullen, also known as the voice of Optimus Prime, also known as the voice of Eeyore in some versions of Winnie the Pooh.
Oh, man. I was a big fan of... And I was a big fan of drawing him of Warduke. The
I had a Warduke action figure.
Yes, and I had that too. That's what, and it was a random action figure because I didn't have any other Dungeons and Dragons toys or anything like that.
It was a weird action figure set because it wasn't a action figure set based on the cartoon.
Right.
It was just Dungeons and Dragons, and it had Warduke. And I also had a dwarf.
Okay.
And I don't remember what the dwarf's name was, but he had a yellow helmet with two big horns coming out of the side.
You literally unlocked the core memory of mine when you said that action figure, because I remembered that he was the same size. He was like Star Wars sized, you know.
Yeah, figure, 3 3/4.
Yep. And I remember him being able to, like, he interacted with those guys because I had nowhere else. As a kid with so many relatives and stuff, I would get so many random toy line toys. Like I'd get one-offs from, you know, all these random toy lines and stuff where it was somebody's like, he'd like that.
Yep.
And that was one of those where I got a Warduke figure and remembering, I don't even have any other Dungeons and Dragons figure. He's going to have to be on Darth Vader's side. And now he's, you know, fighting against, you know, Luke. So,
Yeah, I had him fighting against guys like Snake Eyes and Storm Shadow. Yeah. And then freaking He-Man would come in and he'd just beat them all up because he was like the Hulk. You know,
I love it. All right. So number two for me is another one of these where I don't think we'll ever see an actual release of this show legitimately. I don't think that we're going to ever see, because it's all tied up in rights issues. It's even tied up in ownership issues as far as who owns the actual episodes and properties. So if you've ever wondered what the Muppets were like as kids, we found that out back in 1984. The Muppet Babies gave us that answer. We had toddler versions of Kermit, Miss Piggy, Fozzie, Gonzo, Animal. We even got introduced to Scooter's sister, Skeeter. We met Nanny, the caretaker. This show was all about imagination. The Muppet Babies turned everyday objects into epic adventures. You would literally have Star Wars adventures, Wizard of Oz adventures, pirates. You'd even get like all of these parodies and musicals and everything. It's hard to kind of pinpoint the Muppet Babies as to what kind of show it was, because it was everything all at once.
Quick, there's no time to waste. Move it.
What's the matter with you, Gonzo?
There's an alien monster in the closet. We've got to get out of here before it gets us.
What's all the shouting about?
It's even bigger than I thought.
Yay!
Space Invader!
Hey!
Quick, hide!
The animation was groundbreaking, because you would mix live action clips with cartoon clips. You know, you'd get these wild, you know, hand-drawn scenes sometimes that, you know, that were wild. To me, the cool thing about like the Muppet Babies was it was out of the Muppets universe. You know what I mean? Because it's like the Muppets themselves, I always kind of think of like the Muppet movie being the tale of their origin story, kind of like it was like the Muppet movie happens timeline wise before the Muppet show. And this is how they become entertainers. Right. But the Muppet Babies is this weird multiverse area where, you know, they're all just toddlers. They're all in here together and they're just having these wild adventures.
You must be the brave Hatchet Woodman who protects me from the big bad wolf. Yes.
Well, actually, no. I'm the handsome park ranger who protects the forest from litterbugs like you.
Me?
Yep. I'd say you qualify, wouldn't you?
Well,
the fine for littering is $5 million.
And it's another one of those shows where the opening theme song, not necessarily the song, but the opening sequence tells you everything you need to know about this. Because the opening sequence to Muppet Babies takes them through Indiana Jones, Star Wars, fairy tales, goofy antics in the nursery, and all of this stuff, including a little appearance from Nanny's little socks, right? When she comes in the door, tells you everything you need to know about this show. But to me, it was like one of those things where the Muppet Babies were everywhere, man. It was like I had the, you know, I had the McDonald's plush toys. I had the Happy Meal toys. I had books featuring the Muppet Babies. And then I feel like the Muppet Babies themselves birthed the entire genre of kid versions of cartoons, like, and even kid versions of like celebrities. So like I wrote down some ready. So like, I feel like the Muppet Babies, they birthed shows like A Pup Named Scooby-Doo, Little Rosie, where it was like a Little Rosie O'Donnell as a kid, Flintstone Kids, Life with Louie.
Oh yeah.
Captain Caveman and Son. Pink Panther and Sons, Popeye and Son, even like Tiny Toons Adventures, like kind of, I feel like that birthed out of that. And then you even had like Tom and Jerry Kids. Everybody put out a kid version after the Muppet Babies came out because they thought they can replicate what they did. But what they had was pure magic, man. And now it's interesting because so Disney owns the Muppet characters, right? Henson Associates owns the Muppet Babies, right? As far as the episodes. Disney owns Muppet Babies, the property. And then you have all these other people who own all the properties that they showed.
Yeah.
And so you can't actually get a real release of the show without cutting out every single live action clip that they had. Nobody thought about streaming. Nobody even thought about digital, you know, at that time. And because the Muppets themselves are splintered between three companies, like Sesame Workshop owns Sesame Street, Disney owns the Muppets, and Henson Studios, Muppet Studio, Henson, the Jim Henson Company or whatever, they own the Fraggles, and everything is so kind of split up and segmented that we may never actually see our version of the Muppet Babies again, even though Disney tried to do that as a Disney Junior show. But we'll always have, like, you know, YouTube clips and bootlegs and all that. Go out and seek yourself some real legit Muppet Babies, because there's a reason why it's in my top two. And I did not care that, you know, at the time I was a 8, 9, 10-year-old kid, you know, all the way up until like 1991 watching Muppet Babies.
Yeah. What year did that come out?
It was 84 to 91.
Okay. So I was 12 when it came out.
Yeah.
I watched the crap out of Muppet Babies.
It's so
and
good.
As soon as you said the name Muppet Babies, the first thing that popped into my head, and we're going to do some Stephen karaoke. When your room looks kind of weird and you wish that you weren't there.
Oh, man.
That, I just, yeah.
I
Muppet Babies,
it.
Man. And they made their debut in one of the Muppet movies as kind of a weird fantasy scene.
Muppets Take Manhattan. And so they were in a Muppets Take Manhattan sequence. And out of that sequence is literally where the studios actually said, why aren't we doing something with Muppet Babies?
Yeah, because I guarantee you, every single person in the theater, when that scene came up, went, oh, because they looked so freaking adorable.
Do you know where they had their second appearance?
No.
So their first appearance was on Muppets Take Manhattan. Second appearance was on A Muppet Family Christmas.
Oh, okay. You guys talked about that on an episode of Flip City, and I remember going out to find it because I think you had mentioned you'd have to find it on YouTube if you wanted to watch
it. Yeah, you got to find it on YouTube now.
Because it's got them all, right? From
it's the only
Sesame Street to Muppets.
It's the only Muppet special that has every one of the mainstream Henson creations in it together, interacting.
That's great. Yeah, Muppet Babies, I was all about it. I mean, just right away, you know, like you said, the opening theme music, the whole opening bit, I mean, you got Raiders of the Lost Ark in the opening bit.
Welcome to the basement of doom.
We gotta go now. This fantasy is rated PG. We're underage.
You shall remain here forever.
Yeah? Oh, yeah? Not if I have anything to say about it.
That's all I needed to see, you know, and you said, you know, how do you lump this into a single category? And you can't, but it literally is, if you've ever been a toddler and you've ever hung out with a group of toddlers,
yes,
you've lived Muppet Babies, because that's what it is.
Oh, yeah.
It's just a group. I don't care if they're bears and frogs and pigs. It's a group of toddlers hanging out together during daycare. And they just, their imaginations run wild and they imagine themselves in doing all this crazy stuff, just like every other toddler has ever done.
Love it. I love it. Can't say enough about the Muppet Babies. What's
good stuff.
What's your number two?
Growing Up Geek will be back after these messages.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Step into the savage world of the Hyborian Age and journey through a land of sorcery, steel, and epic adventure with me, Stephen Orr, on Hither Came Conan.
Together, we'll explore the legendary Conan the Barbarian comic series from Marvel Comics, starting with the groundbreaking first issue from 1970 and working our way through each epic tale, one issue at a time. Along the way, I'll also dive into any other Conan comics I can get my hands on. Because when it comes to the titular Sumerian, there's no such thing as too much adventure. Whether you're a diehard Conan fan or just discovering the greatest barbarian of all time, this podcast is your gateway to the blood-soaked battlefields, treacherous kingdoms, and forgotten treasures of Robert E. Howard's timeless creation. New episodes are packed with action, insights, and a little humor, all dedicated to the world of Conan and the creators who brought him to life on the comic book page. So sharpen your swords and subscribe to Hither Came Conan today on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts. Crom demands it. And now back to Growing Up Geek.
My number two is, and I'm going to say this in the style of the opening, Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends.
Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, Iceman and Firestar.
This would have made my number one, but when we get to my number one, you'll understand why it's not my number one. Because Spider-Man is my second most favorite superhero of all time. This show ran for three seasons on NBC from 81 to 83, total of 24 episodes. It brings Spider-Man together with Iceman and Firestar. As a kid, that made complete sense to me. You know, I had no idea that these characters just didn't hang out on a regular basis in the comic books, had no idea that Firestar was created for the show. Yeah. She didn't come from the comics. Iceman, of course, one of the original members of the X-Men, looked like a snowman back then. But basically, you've got these three characters, Peter Parker, Bobby Drake, Iceman, and then Angelica Jones, Firestar. They live together and they're roommates. They hang out, they're buddies. And then when evil strikes, Peter just reaches up on the mantle and moves a football trophy. Why Peter Parker has a football trophy, I have no idea. But he moves it, and then everything in the room transforms. There's just crime fighting, crime lab, love computers it. All over the place. Then they each transform into their superhero selves, which was always a cool part because Firestar, Angelica Jones, she'd kind of hold her hands out to her side and she'd suddenly just glow red hot. And then boom, she was in her costume. Iceman was my favorite because he would literally cover himself in a block of ice.
Oh,
and
so then good.
Break out of it. And he was Iceman. And of course, Spider-Man just had to put his costume on because he didn't have any cool tricks like that. The cartoon is where we first see Iceman using the ice bridge to get around, which is really cool. And they stole that in The Incredibles, which was fine because The Incredibles was awesome. The show introduced me to Stan Lee. I didn't know who Stan Lee was until the show came out and, of course, introduced me to the word Excelsior. It also introduced me to my third most favorite superhero of all time, which is Wolverine, in an episode where we meet Wolverine. And because of the show, for the longest time, I just assumed that Canadians had Australian accents because I knew from the comic books. When I finally get to Wolverine in the comic books, I learn that he's Canadian. Well, in the cartoon, he's got an Australian accent. So as a kid, I just assume, well, Canadians talk like Australians, I guess. That's just the accent of Canada.
I love it.
But I can distinctly remember the moment Wolverine first shows up on screen because it's like a reunion. Firestar in the show was an X-Man, and of course, so is Iceman. They go to an X-Men reunion, and they are introduced to newer members of the team, and one of them is Wolverine. And one of the first things Wolverine does is he pops one of his claws to spear like an apple, some fruit that's in a bowl, and hey, love, you want some fruit?
We're very happy to have you back, even for a short visit.
It's wonderful to see you again, Professor.
Firestar, over here.
coming, Cyclops.
This is our other new member, Wolverine.
How you doing? Want a piece of fruit?
And I just went, holy crap, he's got freaking razor-sharp claws that come out of the back of his hand. That is the coolest dude I have ever seen in my whole entire life. And it wasn't long after that that my older brother, he's the guy that got me into comic books. At this point in time, he's old enough that he can drive. He's got a car. He goes to the comic book store. He brings comic books home. And then he lets me read them. And he said, so there's a comic book coming out that has, it stars Wolverine. Wolverine and Kitty Pryde. Do you want me to pick those up for you? And I was like, heck yes. But not only is Spider-Man my second most favorite superhero of all time, I get to see superheroes on TV.
What kind of party is this anyway?
A very strange party, if you'll pardon the expression.
Doctor Strange!
Hey, and Captain America!
Who is she? Shauna, the Jungle Queen.
Doctor Strange is right. We've been here an hour and we haven't even seen our host.
And again, you'll notice a theme in my list. We've had superheroes with space stars. We've had sword and sorcery with Thundar and Dungeons and Dragons. And now we're back to superheroes with Spider-Man and his amazing friends.
So this is the one item where you have this on your list as number two. In my heart, this is my number one. But I was excited that we were going to get to talk about this nonetheless, because if this was an alternate timeline, this would be my number one and everything else would have gotten bumped down one. And I would have had a tie or something so I can include Pac-Man in this. But this is the show that got me just falling in love with superheroes. And it was the thing where I was also mad at this show because the Bobby Drake that we get in the cartoon is never the Bobby Drake we get in any of the comics. And like, he's fine in the comics. He's a fine character. But Iceman was my favorite superhero for a long time from this show. But I never got that version like in the comics. And it was just kind of funny where it was like, yeah, you know, I wanted the whole sequence and everything. And I would pretend to be Iceman as a kid just so that I can do the, you know, that whole movement thing. It was just, you know, it was the coolest thing. And then Stan Lee being the narrator for, so the first season, I believe, of Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, Stan Lee doesn't show up as the narrator. Stan Lee then narrates, he re-narrates or whatever, all of the first season episodes and then does the second season and then all of those things. And then it's funny where it's like, because some of those episodes, if you look them up on YouTube, do not include his narration. And so it's kind of, I don't know if that was a rights thing where, you know, maybe they couldn't distribute Stan Lee. I don't know. But the phrase, "Welcome, true believers," has stuck into my heart so much that that's how I open up all my podcasts. With Welcome True Believers, because that is just this rallying cry for people like us, Stephen. For those of us who have grown up geek, we are the true believers. And so that has always been that whole, you know, rallying cry for Stan Lee. And so when he, you know, that was my first intro to him, I just thought he was the narrator. and then I grew up learning more and more about him. And that was it, man. It was like, and the funny thing about Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends is that during that first season, I believe, another Spider-Man cartoon was running concurrent to that season. And it was the same show, minus Firestar and Iceman. It was the same animation, same sequences, you know, in a lot of cases. But was it running on the same channel or was it running on an opposite?
You know, I don't know. And I don't remember watching that cartoon on Saturday mornings. It's like my memories are Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. And it was only just a handful of years ago that I found out that there was this other show. And I didn't know if it was, okay, so they did like Spider-Man for a season and it did okay, but they wanted to inject more into it. So that turned into Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. I don't know, but it is the exact same show without those
and
other
I think
characters.
It even includes like another portion of the same theme song, but it just may have like a little bit.
Yeah.
But and it was paired with the Incredible Hulk. Like that's what I remembered was that version was paired with an Incredible Hulk. And so it was like a whole combined hour thing. But nothing beats Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. And I know it's number two, you know, on that, but like in my heart, it is so number one, because again, it was like, it brought in all of these other, you know, characters too. It's like you had a Captain America episode. You had, you know, all these different villains coming in. This is one of those things where it was like, I usually attribute Dr. Doom as a Spider-Man villain, you know, because of shows like this.
Yeah. He's in the opening theme, the opening sequence is Dr. Doom. So.
I love it so much. Such a great pick, man. Bravo. I love Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends.
Well, and you know, you mentioned Bobby Drake, Iceman, and his character on the show. And he and Spider-Man have, you know, they have kind of this great relationship. They're basically, it feels real, the two of them, how they're buddies, but they also seem to all, you know, they compete for girls and stuff like that. And they try to outdo each other, and they give each other the business a lot.
Hey, that was
the real Green Goblin.
Yeah. And he just took Mona. Yeah.
Say, I better change to Iceman and help you guys get her back.
And he thought of that all by himself.
And in the comic books, that was not a thing. But of course, Spider-Man was best buds with the Human Torch in the comic books. So it's like when they put the show together, maybe they couldn't do the Human Torch.
Yeah.
And so they said, well, let's just, we'll find somebody else. But we wanted to get a fire person in there. So that's Firestar. We'll create Firestar. And then the Human Torch character was replaced by Bobby Drake, the Iceman, which would be the opposite of the Human Torch.
I 100% buy that. Yeah.
I think the funniest coincidence to come out of the show, though, has to do with Wolverine. Like I said, is a character that is voiced with an Australian accent in the show.
Yes.
I still don't know why. I don't know if they just couldn't figure out. I don't know. Did they just not want to do a Canadian accent? Did they not want Wolverine to go, take off, you hoser? You know, I don't know. But what ends up happening in real life, we get an Australian famous for playing Wolverine with Hugh Jackman. That's a weird coincidence.
I bet you we probably didn't know much about Wolverine at the time, because it's like, it's one of those things where as a character, a lot of what we know about him now, most folks didn't even know about him until the late 80s, you know?
Well, but that's the thing. They would have known, the people putting the show together, had they just asked Marvel Comics, hey, what nationality is Wolverine, by the way? Oh, he's Canadian. Okay, Australian accent. That's what we're going to use for him, you know? Because by this point, Wolverine was getting fairly... we were smack dab, I believe, in the middle of the Claremont Burn X-Men run. And that's what made Wolverine so popular. And so, yeah, I would really love if there's anybody alive today that was involved with this show and was back there during that decision, I would love to know why Wolverine was given an Australian accent.
Says here he's Canadian. It's like, what do Canadians sound like?
aren't they the shrimp on the Bobby guys?
What are the shrimp on the Crocodile Dundee? He's from Canada. Isn't he? Yeah.
Say Canada, Australia, same thing. Same thing.
Yeah. I love it.
Okay, so before we each get to our number one, top number one, most favorite Saturday morning cartoon of all time, I think it might be a good idea, because we each have some honorable mentions. So we've each chosen five. And rather than go back and forth, let's just go through our honorable mentions. And since I graciously allowed you to go first with the top five, I will go first with my five honorable mentions.
Go for it, man.
These are in no particular order. From 1982, 13 episodes, airing on NBC, The Incredible Hulk. This had one of the most awesome intros, the first part of the intro. And it's just like, bum, 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 as he's walking toward the screen. It's awesome. The Hulk has always been somebody I've been kind of tangentially interested in. But the cartoon, I don't honestly remember too much about it, but I remember really enjoying it, watching it on Saturday mornings with Spider-Man. My second honorable mention ran from 1983 to 1985, a total of 29 episodes, The Littles.
It's the that's little blah blue blah blah blue.
Yeah. I don't think that's actually the song. But that not only was that a fun show, the animation compared to like Hanna-Barbera or some of the other stuff out there. I think this was a DIC, a Deke production. The animation was really good. And I've always liked the idea of not only these little people living in the walls of this house, but how they use everyday objects that, you know, like a spool, an empty spool that had thread on it. They use it as a table and buttons for wheels on their cars and stuff like that. I've always really found that kind of stuff interesting.
The Littles was always one of those cartoons that was on. And I remember like I would always catch or I would catch the end of it or something like that because I had like just finished watching whatever was on opposite it. And then I would flip the channel to, you know, because it was an ABC show, right? If Littles was on ABC.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that.
But it was these tiny little people, the Littles, a family, Tom, Lucy, Grandpa and Dinky, who lived in the house of a family whose last name was Big, B-I-G-G.
I love it.
All right. My third honorable mention from 1964. I think this might be my very first superhero love. Speed of Lightning, Roar of Thunder, Underdog.
Nice.
Speed of Lightning, Roar of Thunder, Fighting All, Power Thunder, Underdog. Underdog.
I frickin' loved Underdog. And if I remember correctly, didn't he change into Underdog because he had a little pill in a ring and he'd swallow the pill and he turned into, he was Shoeshine Boy. I think he had a little ring on his hand that would pop open and it was a little pill in it and he'd take the pill and he'd turn into Underdog.
Ow. Yeah. I don't remember the pill.
Kind of crazy.
A secret place in my ring I fill with an Underdog super energy pill.
The Lois Lane, I guess he was like a Superman, but a dog, but it was a silly, you know, it was a comedy show. So it was all very silly. The Lois Lane character was Sweet Polly Purebred. She was a TV reporter. And then you had bad guys on there like Simon Bar Sinister. That ran on both NBC and CBS throughout the 1960s and the 1970s. And like I said, I think it was probably one of my first superhero loves was Underdog. And you just can't beat that theme song. Ooh, ah, ooh, ah, ooh. Loved it.
Awesome.
Honorable mention number four, another superhero in the humorous vein, Captain Caveman and the Teen Angels.
Captain Caveman!
Set free by the Teen Angels from his prehistoric block of glacier ice comes the world's first superhero, Captain Caveman! Now the constant companion to the Teen Angels, Brenda, Dee Dee, and Taffy in their hilarious and sometimes scary mystery missions. Get ready for Captain Caveman and the Teen Angels.
Captain Caveman was awesome. Picture, who was the guy, who was the cousin from the Addams Family that was just all hair? Cousin It. Picture Cousin It with a club and a cape, and that's Captain Caveman. Loved him. That was Hanna-Barbera, I believe. 1977. Yeah, it was kind of, I think he also had a bunch of different, there were a bunch of different versions.
They did, because Captain Caveman would also show up in the Flintstones, and like that. This is when like Betty and Wilma were working, and like they would like he was a reporter. It was kind of like the same Superman stuff.
Yeah.
And they would show up with him too.
But he had a club that would, little compartments would open up on it. Little gadgets would come out of his club. I feel like they were also very Flintstone-like in their technology. Like a little bird would come out with something or stuff.
Captain Caveman, actually, they had a good modern version of Captain Caveman come out recently. Oh, what was it? Was it Scoob? No, it wasn't in Scoob. There was something that just came out recently that featured like a version of Captain Caveman in it, and it was voiced by Tracy Morgan.
Oh,
and
that's perfect.
and it was great.
Wow.
And I'm trying to figure out, I got to remember like what it came out of, but he had a very brief appearance. Hmm. And I was like, that was a great choice for Captain Caveman.
What was the movie? Was it Scoob that had Blue Falcon?
Yes.
Dino-Mutt?
The recent Scoob. That was another one where they created the sequel to Scoob and they shelved it. Warner Brothers did. And so it was just so terrible. But
heartbreaking.
Yeah, they had a version of Blue Falcon. And I'm not a fan of messing with Blue Falcon. Like when they make him kind of like, you know, dumb or just like, you know, like I'm a big fan of playing Blue Falcon as straight.
Yeah, he's the straight
Dog
guy.
Dog Wonder is the goofball.
Yep. Yep.
But yeah, it was he showed up in, who did the voice? In Scoob. That's right. It was also in Scoob.
All right. I guess I'll have to.
Tracy Morgan shows up as Captain Caveman.
Is that a CGI animated feature?
It's cartoon CGI.
Right,
it's the polished up animation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. My final honorable mention, Heathcliff. Now, Heathcliff actually had two different versions. There was a 1980s Correct. Version, or a version from 1980 and a version from 1984. And for me, it was the 1984 version. It's also known as Heathcliff and the Cadillac Cats. And
nice.
One of the things I remember most about this is a group of cats, when they would run away from a threat, they would always yell, "Run away, run away." And it wasn't, I didn't realize that was a Monty Python thing, because I don't think I had seen the Holy Grail
by that
point. And so once I realized that's what that was, it made it even better. But yeah, Heathcliff.
Now let me ask you a question, because I don't want to, this is your show, not my show. Okay. So let me ask you a question. Did Heathcliff and the Cadillac Cats come out on Saturday mornings where you were from?
Yes.
So they were an after school show for me.
Oh, okay.
So that version, the Saturday morning version of Heathcliff that I remember was the Heathcliff Marmaduke Hour.
Maybe that's the one I meant to put down, because I know I got it from the Saturday morning schedule that's on Wikipedia.
It's your show. So yes, absolutely. But like, I know that you and I had talked about like our distinction of Saturday morning versus, and I just remember, like, I remember because that theme song, you can't beat that theme song. It's like Heathcliff, no one should. And then the Cadillac Cats also had their own show also before they got merged with Heathcliff. So I could be in the wrong here.
I don't know. Now that you mention it, that being an after school show seems super familiar.
I remember, and we could save this for the after school show, but I remember coming home to that theme song when I first moved to Florida as a kid, and it was on TV 33, and it was part of their flagship show.
Maybe where I messed up is that, because like I said, there are two different versions, Heathcliff from 1980 and then Heathcliff and the Cadillac Cats from 84. Maybe I saw Heathcliff, the 80 version, on the Saturday morning cartoon schedule,
maybe,
and mistook it for the after school one that I used to watch every.
But I do remember that the Cadillac Cats had their own like separate like show until they merged with Heathcliff, and I do have to say, though, when it comes to Heathcliff, going just back to that part, man, he is the orange cat with attitude that I just love. Like, it was one of those things where I'm a Garfield fan, yes. But Heathcliff just had that, like, he had that bite to him. Like, he was ruthless.
Yeah.
And it was just, it was one of those things where he was, like, part of a family. He was domesticated, but he was very much a street cat.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
he didn't take any crap. I'm a Garfield fan, too. I had many of the books of the collected strips. I had a plush Garfield, Odie, Nermal, had all that junk. Never really got into the cartoon too much. And I think maybe, I don't know when it started to air, but I think maybe it was kind of, I was a little bit older at that point, but
it was definitely a late 80s, early 90s show, because it was Garfield and Friends. And that was where he got paired with U.S. Acres. So it was like a different kind of thing. It is on my co-host Greg's top list. And then that we brought up that theme song, you know, friends are there. And then, you know, that was it. But Heathcliff, man, that's the cat with the mouse.
I'll tell you what, since there's some controversy here, since I think that the version I'm remembering is the after school version, I'll throw out one more. I don't have any information written down about it. Pole Position. I remember really getting into that one.
From now on, like your parents were, you are the secret force of Pole Position.
They're moving real fast. They're the only ones who can get there on time.
Okay, sis.
Yes, let me just tell you, Pole Position is in this category of cartoons with theme songs that just slap. It is so good. I mean, tells you the story again, tells you the whole theme of this story. It's like, you know, basically you have these kids that they are now in the pole position because their parents used to be, and now they're on this mission. But then you get like that theme song that just cranks. I mean, it is such a good theme song and another video game turned cartoon.
Yeah. And I was never really into the video game turned cartoon milieu, as it were, but I remember my biggest memory from Pole Position is that A, the animation looked really good. And B, I just remember being very surprised at how much I enjoyed the show, that it had a good story and animation looked good.
So good, man.
All right, your turn. Your honorable mentions.
Okay, so I got some honorable mentions. I might cheat a little bit because if you're ever on the Flip City podcast, you know that when it comes to honorable mentions, I typically cheat on the number.
Should be on your bingo card.
It needs to be on the bingo card for sure. Because I just could not narrow it down. And I just figured, okay, since they're honorable mentions, I'm going to kind of bounce off of yours a little bit. So technically, these aren't it.
Go for it.
We talk about barbarians. We talk about dudes with swords. I always think of Black Star.
Yes, that was on my original list.
John Black Star, astronaut. Is swept through a black hole into an ancient alien universe. Trapped on the planet Sagar, Black Star is rescued by the tiny Trobit people. In turn, he joins their fight for freedom against the cruel overlord. Who rules by the might of the Power Star. The Power Star is split into the Power Sword and the Star Sword. And so, with Star Sword in hand, Black Star, together with his allies, sets out to save the planet Sagar.
Black Star is so cool because it blends this, like, Flash Gordon type story, right? Where you have, like, this athlete who's in space, and he ends up on a planet that is, you know, that has regressed, right? So, it's like, he's a modern space guy. But now he's on a planet where he's got to become a barbarian. Literally, he switches from spacesuit to now he's like in a loincloth with his sword. And that version of the sword, like this sword is like a sword that was like broken in half.
Yeah.
And so the bad guy has one version. Whoa. He has the other version. And if you merge the swords together, it's the ultimate weapon. But Black Star was always like a cool show to me growing up. And then bouncing off of the Scooby-Doo talk from earlier, right?
Let me say something really quick about Black Star, because when I was putting my top five list together, I think we talked about this earlier. I just basically went into the different schedules from each season of daytime television for Saturday, and any name that stood out as something that I remembered, that name sounded familiar, I put it on the list and then started to narrow it down. Black Star is on my list, but I don't remember anything about it. So everything you just said, it was like, oh, just started flooding some stuff back to me.
It was so good. His name was John Blackstar, and it was another opening. That opening, he tells you the whole story about how he got to the planet and what he's doing. So good. Chef's kiss with that show. A lot of fun. Bouncing off of the Scooby-Doo talk from earlier, I wanted to throw an honorable mention to the other really good 80s Scooby-Doo show, which was The 13 Ghosts of Scooby-Doo.
This is a warning to all living mortals that whosoever opens this chest of demons will release 13 of the most terrifying ghosts upon the face of the earth.
And the reason why I wanted to shout that out real quick was that it also included Scooby, Shaggy, Daphne. It included Scrappy, but it also included a little kid named Flim Flam, right? And it included Vincent Price as the basically like the leader of this team.
Wow.
And so if you've never heard of 13 Ghosts of Scooby-Doo, let me just unpack this really quick. There is this chest with a skull on it that contains these 13 ghosts, right? Scooby and Shaggy, of course, accidentally open the chest and release the 13 ghosts. So Vincent Price is this old Ghostbuster type guy, right? And he spent his whole life collecting these 13 ghosts and locking them in this chest. So now he tasks Scooby and Shaggy with, now you got to go out and find these 13 ghosts. 13 ghosts, 13 episodes in a season.
Wow.
It works out perfectly. They spend every episode going through and catching every one of these, you know, ghosts. However, they technically only caught 12 ghosts because you have this, like the beginning and the end of the series. The way that kind of the math kind of adds up, they only caught 12 ghosts. And then the series got canceled after the first season. Okay. Then I discovered that one of these Scooby-Doo movies that just came out in 2019, right, is called The Curse of the 13th Ghost.
Whoa.
They brought it cool. back, and literally it explains the absence of Fred and Velma in a real way. They bring back a Vincent Price impersonator to do the voice because he's, you know, passed away. And then it all revolves around the mystery of this 13th nice. Ghost. And so it is well worth the watch. It's only 13 episodes. You can actually you just find them online really easy. It's worth the watch. And then it's worth to watch this movie. Anyway, I spent longer on an honorable mention than I needed to, but I could do a whole series on the 13 Ghosts of Scooby-Doo honorable mention. Here's the other ones really quick. Okay. So here's my real list. Gummy bears.
Yes.
Okay.
Gummy bears bouncing here and there.
Gummy Bears is a prime example of a show that has lore, has world building, is not sequential episodic necessarily, but it does tell a sequential story. And so it's actually, if you're into Dungeons and Dragons, if you're into that entire like world of sword and sorcery, you got to give the Gummy Bears a try.
Surprisingly good.
Oh, so good. I hadn't watched it since I was a kid. And then during the pandemic, when Disney Plus debuted, like, and all that, we burned through the entire series, and it's so good and rewatchable. Next one is back to the video games. Captain N, the Game Master.
Huh. Welcome to Video Land.
Wake up, Kid Icarus.
Welcome to Castle D.
It's Klongo Land.
By the brain, we'll get you, little princess.
Princess, the palace is under siege.
Behold, the ultimate warp zone.
Captain N was at the height of Nintendo.
Okay.
So we're pulling in a kid from the real world playing video games, gets sucked into this world, right, where literally the heroes are classic original like Nintendo heroes. So you've got Simon Belmont from Castlevania, you've got Kid Icarus in there with you. I think you even have like this little robotic Game Boy, right? Like who like does this thing. And then all of the villains, you get Mega Man. And like all this kind of stuff. And then the villains are all of the classic Nintendo villains that are in this. And so It's a great, I think you get Metroid, like all that stuff. But anyway, it's all these classic Nintendo characters along with classic Nintendo villains. A lot of fun. Nice. Definitely worth checking out. Oh, he has the gun. He has the gun from Nintendo.
Oh, okay. Cool.
As his gun.
Yeah.
So it's so cool. Classic 60s cartoon, The Drac Pack.
Monsters of the past comes a new generation dedicated to reversing the evil image of their forefathers. Under the leadership of none other than Count Dracula, known as Big D, three teenagers formed the do-gooder group named the Drac Pack. With special powers, they can transform into super mighty monsters and use their skills against all evildoers, especially the diabolical Dr. Dredd and his renegade rascals, Toad, Fly, Mummy Man, and Vampyra, a group known as Ogre, the organization of generally rotten enterprises. It's right versus wrong, good over greed, niceness against naughtiness. That's the dedication of the terrific trio, Frankie, Howler, and Drac Jr., the Drac Pack.
If you know me, you know that I am all about Frankenstein and all the original Universal monsters and all that. This is from a classic from like the 60s and early 70s. It's literally the son of Dracula, son of Wolfman, son of Frankenstein and all that. They fight crime, solve mysteries as the Drac Pack. They have a transformation sequence where they're normal teenagers and then they turn into the actual monsters and
cool.
That's a lot of fun. And then my last two, Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Of course.
That's your classic 80s getting the music. I'm talking about the Alvin and Chipmunks where they were able to cover Prince, Billy Joel, Michael Jackson, Cyndi Lauper, all that kind of stuff. Yep. That was just classic. And then my final honorable mention is the Ruby Spears version of Superman, because this version of Superman had the opening that matched the serial with George Reeves.
Okay.
Where it had the original, the whole entire monologue of, how he came from, Krypton, Mild Manor reporter Clark Kent, and just like that whole sequence matched with the Superman the movie music.
Nice.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings in a single bound. Superman. Yes, Superman. Strange visitor from another planet who came to Earth with powers and abilities far beyond those of mortal men. Superman. Who, disguised as Clark Kent, mild-mannered reporter for a great metropolitan newspaper, fights the never-ending battle for truth, justice, and the American way.
And so you actually got a version of John Williams' original Superman theme song mixed in with this. It's worth just pulling up the intro to the show just for that. It was short-lived. The Ruby, it's specifically the Ruby Spears, not the Hanna-Barbera version of Superman, but everything about that Superman series was my favorite Superman standalone series, even better than Superman the Animated Series.
Wow. I'll look
those
it up.
That's my exhaustive list of honorable mentions.
Cool. Yeah, I'll look up that Superman. I feel like I've heard of that. And considering that he is my number one most favorite superhero, you'd think I would have seen it, but I'll look it up.
It's super short lived, but so worth pulling up.
70s?
It is 70, late 70s, early 80s.
Okay. I mean, that sounds super familiar.
Yeah. But that opening sequence, man, is the best of the George Reeves Superman intro and the Superman the motion picture intro. Oh, yeah. So good.
Cool.
Growing Up Geek will be back after these messages.
Are you looking for a podcast that dives into the very beginnings of the Man of Steel? Then check out the Superman Super Show. My name is Steven, and along with Ed Moore, we're just a couple of guys separated by 1,000 miles of geography who like to read comics. Now, we don't claim to be experts on Superman or the Golden Age of comics, but we're on a mission to read every single Superman story from his earliest adventures, one comic book at a time. And each episode will take you back to the Golden Age, where Superman's journey began. From his first leaps over tall buildings to battling mad scientists and mobsters, we break down every story, sharing our thoughts, insights, and laughs along the way. New episodes drop every 2 weeks. So whether you're a longtime Superman fan or just curious about his roots, we invite you to join us on this incredible journey through comic book history. Find the Superman Super Show wherever you listen to podcasts and start exploring the Golden Age of Superman with us today.
And now back to Growing Up Geek.
All right. So those are our honorable mentions, which means that we are down to our number one most favorite Saturday morning cartoon of all time. Wayne, go ahead.
Okay. So take everything I said when it came to Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. Take that with a grain of salt, because this really is honestly still number one in my heart, even though we already talked about Spider-Man. This, when trouble comes, if there's something strange in the neighborhood, who are you going to call? You're going to call the real Ghostbusters.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
The real Ghostbusters came out in 1986 through 1991. It picked off where the 1984 movie left off. It followed Peter Venkman, Egon Spengler, Ray Stantz, and Winston Zeddemore, and Janine Melnitz, the incredible receptionist at the firehouse, alongside Slimer, their sidekick, where from the movie, he was just an evil spud, did not have a name. When we get to the real Ghostbusters, he has a name. His name is Slimer. It is full of all the Ghostbusters goodness. The title, The Real Ghostbusters, came from a dispute with Filmation over who could actually use the name Ghostbusters, because Filmation actually had a live action 70s TV show called Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
And in fact, so much so that the Ghostbusters movie had to have other cuts made where they were calling the Ghostbusters everything from the Ghost Fighters to the Ghost Breakers, so that they can kind of figure this out and settle it. Filmation ended up creating their own Ghostbusters cartoon to try and capitalize on the Ghostbusters fame. But this show had everything. It had references to the movies. It had brand new ghosts and brand new villains. It even had the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man popping up every now and then. And then the voice actors in this show were second to none. You had Maurice LaMarche. You had Frank Welker. You had, as Peter Venkman, Lorenzo Music, and eventually after the second season, Dave Coulier. It was just an amazing show that literally spawned merchandise, toys, comics, all of it centered around this version of the Ghostbusters. To most people that grew up late in the 80s, this is their first introduction to the Ghostbusters. And so for me, my number one pick for this episode, it's got to be the real Ghostbusters. You can't beat them. I have my favorite episodes. I have episodes that I watch specifically around Halloween time.
PKE readings have been increasing all month across the city, but they took a real jump when some ancient ruins from Ireland arrived 2 weeks ago. The ruins date from the 7th century.
7th century Ireland. That's where Halloween started.
I didn't even know Halloween was that old.
Sure. It marked the transition to a time when the nights got longer, scarier.
The Irish and Scottish immigrants brought it to America, where we called it Halloween.
That's utterly fascinating, Egon. But what's the point?
Those relics brought here from Ireland go back to when Halloween started. What if Halloween is based on something that really happened long ago?
I've got episodes that I watch specifically during Christmas time. Imagine an adventure with the Ghostbusters where they bust the ghost of Christmas past, present, and future. Okay. And so it's all there. And it is, oddly enough, it is not a kiddie version of the Ghostbusters. There are some episodes of the show that are just as like spooky and terrifying as any other Ghostbusters, you know, film that you could see. So, in fact, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, Greg and I are going to be talking about it in a future episode of the Flip City podcast, because it is probably the closest thing to a real live action episode of the real Ghostbusters that we can ever get.
Yeah.
And so that's it, man. That's my number one, the real Ghostbusters.
That's a good pick. That was a good show. I remember really getting into it. I would have been, what you said, 86. I would have been 14.
Yeah.
Very well animated. And yeah, that's some good episodes, some good, you know, not, I don't want to say adult, because that has certain connotations, but grown up, almost more sophisticated types of stories. And of course, the intro, and nobody's going to see this on the audio, but they did this little dance, this little finger pointing dance in the intro. Yeah, that's a good pick.
You can't beat that. And honestly, just when it comes to like a Saturday morning cartoon, if you're looking for like the action and the adventure and all, it fits right in line. If you're a teenage kid, you know, I was a preteen when it first started. I was 10 when it first came out. So if you're teen, preteen, and you're like, well, you know, like maybe you're a little too old for, shirt tails.
Yeah.
You know, you're right in line for something like the real Ghostbusters, because that thing is timeless and the episodes still hold up.
Well, and for you folks out there, if you have listened to obviously the second episode, and if you haven't, why not? You know, I talk about the 90s had this influx of cartoons based on movie properties. And while Ghostbusters started in 86, I think they kind of let off that charge. It's like after Ghostbusters, the real Ghostbusters got kind of popular. And then, in the 90s, we just see all kinds of movies being made into cartoons for Saturday mornings.
Oh yeah. And you know, the reason why you have people jumping on to this episode right now is because of the cross promotion, man. Like that's what's happening. You know, people join from the first time because they're part of the dozens and dozens of Flip City podcast listeners.
That's right.
So
hundreds of dozens.
Yeah.
All right. My number one from 1973, collaboration between Hanna-Barbera and DC Comics. Bum, bum. Bum, 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 dun, 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 dun. Super Friends.
Banded together from remote galaxies are 13 of the most sinister villains of all time. The Legion of Doom. Dedicated to a single objective, the conquest of the universe. Only one group dares to challenge this intergalactic threat. The Super Friends. The Justice League of America versus the Legion of Doom. This is the Challenge of the Super Friends.
Super Friends. Okay, so I would have been two when this show started, or actually one, depending on what time of the year it started. But here's the thing. This show starts in 73. It ends up spawning different versions of it throughout the years from 73 to 85. I think there were seven different versions. And the problem is, if you look it up, depending on if, you know, when it was streaming and DVD and whatnot, a lot of times you'll just see it under the umbrella of the Super Friends. And then each version is considered a season, even though certain versions had more than one season. So it gets kind of complicated. But the version that really, for me, is my favorite of the Super Friends is from 1978. It's called The Challenge of the Super Friends. And when the Super Friends starts, it's just Superman, Wonder Woman, Aquaman, Batman, and Robin. Then they have these teen sidekicks, Marvin and Wendy, and Wonder Dog. Because, again, you always had to have the animal.
Kind of have a pooch.
But then eventually, throughout these various versions, Some of the other characters come on. Green Lantern, Green Arrow, Firestorm, Cyborg is in one of the versions. But Challenge of the Super Friends in 1978 was it featured episodes of the Justice League, basically, because that's who they were in the cartoon. The show was called Super Friends, but they were the Justice League. And they were in the Great Hall of Justice, and their trouble alert computer would tell them about these problems. But in Challenge of the Super Friends, there was the Legion of Doom.
I know you're here, Luthor. Show yourself.
I finally get to see the Man of Steel in his moment of doom.
Tell me where the other Super Friends are, Luthor.
They're probably already on their way to the Great Hall of Justice in the sky.
That's it, Luthor. You're through spreading your evil.
Lex Luthor, yes. Bizarro Superman. Basically, for every one of the Justice Leaguers, there was a member of the Legion of Doom. And they would fight every week. And it was completely awesome. And anybody who's ever seen it remembers, meanwhile, at the Legion of Doom, you'd see the Legion of Doom headquarters come up out of the swamp, look like a Darth Vader mask almost.
It did.
But yeah, that was some good stuff. And I don't know. I don't know what else I want to say about it. Superman is my single most favorite superhero of all time. I've liked him since I was 5. I know that because I have a picture of myself on my birthday holding up a Superman shirt with a big, happy, excited look on my face. I have a picture, same year, Halloween, in my Superman plastic costume that you'd get off the rack at a Sears or JCPenney. And this, the Super Friends, though I've always been a Marvel guy, I started out a DC guy just simply from the Super Friends because they had just some of the best epic characters that were just, I don't know what else to say. They were great. I loved them.
The Super Friends were always there. It was one of those things where that was probably my first entry into like anything about like DC Comics was the Super Friends cartoon. And it was a great opportunity because you get like everybody in there. I'm also a Superman guy, right? So Superman is my favorite superhero of all time. And it does a really great job of showing Superman working with all the other heroes. And he really does seem like an elder statesman. Yep. Like even in that, it's like he's not just like the boss, but he's really like he's above everybody else in that, you know, in virtue and in character. It's just really interesting. He's probably the most Boy Scoutish of all the versions of the Big Blue Boy Scout,
yep,
you know?
Yep.
But the cool thing about the Super Friends is that it also runs into, it's kind of got like a Scooby-Doo mentality when it comes to distribution, because every time the Super Friends comes out with a different title, it's a new series. And so they would get canceled or they would end the series and it would start again. It was a great syndication tactic and it was also a great, you know, earning money from the networks and like that kind of thing. Not great when it comes to trying to assemble a DVD set or a VHS set of everything in chronological order, right? Because it's like, it's a mess trying to find, even now when it's streaming, because like it's hard to find every episode as it's streaming. Right now, it's actually going on, it's actually airing on MeTV Toons.
Yeah.
I love talking about that. And so I set the DVR basically to record every episode I can from there just so that I can have it ready and handy. But it is one of those things where what I love the most about the Super Friends is that whole thing. It's like, it's got everybody. It puts everybody together. You get these cool segments where this episode or this one adventure is going to feature these two superheroes. And then the next adventure is going to feature these two. And you run into all these different seasons where some seasons are an hour long. Some are a half hour long. Some are an hour and a half. Like it's like where they pile a bunch of episodes in there all at once. But the Legion of Doom series of episodes, the Challenge of the Super Friends, is so good because every superhero has a villain in that crowd.
Yep.
And then you have a couple of bonus villains because Superman has Lex Luthor and Bizarro. Yep. You know, and then you have like Batman has the Joker and the Penguin. Yep. And, you know, I think Batman probably had the most villains in the Legion of Doom because he also had like the Riddler. Yep. You know, a lot of things. And then probably my favorite villain in that series was Solomon Grundy.
Oh, yeah.
Because he was like literally like the white pale Hulk, yep. You know, and it was just so good. The version of Solomon Grundy in the Super Friends was so much even better than the ones that they would have in the comics and stuff. He was so good. But I remember specifically the seasons where they debuted Firestorm.
Yeah.
And they debuted Cyborg because they were on the two superpowers versions of the Super Friends.
Yes.
And so one season they debuted Firestorm, and that was super cool. But then I believe it was the Galactic Guardians superpowers show was where they debuted Cyborg.
Yeah.
And that was seeing those two new characters and then up against Darkseid.
Oh yeah.
Was so cool and so awesome to experience. But yeah, like that show with the theme song being so dun 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 dun, 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 you know, just constantly flowing through your brains, like that theme song is so iconic. I can't believe it hasn't been like redone or replicated like in a movie.
Yep.
You know, like they didn't try to sneak it into the Justice League movie or something like that. But man, I gotta tell you, it's so good. That deserves to round out this episode. That Super Friends is amazing.
Challenge of the Super Friends is one of those series that I believe it was an hour long, and one half was just kind of like your typical Super Friends kind of episode, what you had seen kind of before, just the Super Friends tackling some kind of worldwide event, you know, that, you know, the mad scientist turning the water into Kool-Aid or something. And then the second story, the second half, was their battle with the Legion of Doom.
I'll deal with you later, Luthor.
I doubt it, Superman. I doubt it.
And the superpowers version introduced me. That was the first time I'd ever heard of Darkseid. That's where I was introduced to Darkseid. But yeah, Super Friends, chef's kiss.
I do got to tell you, Super Friends is the first cartoon that I remember mainstream cartoons running PSAs for me.
Yes.
So, you know, guys like Aquaman telling me not to waste water, Batman telling me not to, you know, not to go into, you know, the kitchen drawers and just grab sharp objects. All of those things, you know, Superman teaching me how to dial 911, like all of those.
Yep.
You know, all of those things were just, that was the first cartoon that I really remember, like those PSAs coming out of that, like, you know, stuff that like G.I. Joe and He-Man are all famous for.
Yeah.
I think the Super Friends initiated.
Yeah. Well, and here's the thing. Memory is a funny thing because, you know, for me, the first time I started watching Super Friends was Challenge of the Super Friends, and it had the Wonder Twins. The original Super Friends had Marvin, Wendy, and Wonder Dog. Well, as you're watching, you know, in 1978, you're watching Challenge of the Super Friends. They're also showing reruns of the first version. But my memory was always that I always understood it in my brain that the Challenge of the Super Friends came first, and then they created this stupid version with Wendy, Marvin, and Wonder Dog. And it wasn't until the last couple of years that I realized that, no, that one came first. And it was the Wonder Twins that came second.
I think in DC Comics, I think I want to say it was in 52, there's this version where like the multiverse kind of comes back or whatever. I think there is a few panels in 52 where Marvin and Wendy make an appearance as kind of being out there in the multiverse somewhere. But yeah, I was not a Marvin and Wendy guy. You know, it's kind of one of those things where like, okay, we get, you know, we have to suffer through them in order to get to, you know, Superman and Wonder Woman. But and then I also remember as a kid getting ring pops.
Oh yeah.
And then using those ring pops with like my cousins to play the Wonder Twins.
Yep.
So
I have one last thing to say about Super Friends and we'll wrap it all up. But there is an episode, or at least a scene. There's a moment I remember from one of the episodes, and I have been scouring YouTube trying to find it, and I can't. So if anybody listening can tell me which episode it comes out of. I distinctly remember that there is a reason the Earth has been moved out of its normal orbit. It's shifted in space for some reason or another, and Superman has to put it back. And I remember it distinctly because he flies out into space, turns around, grabs the Earth by the atmosphere, basically, and pushes it back into place. And even as a little boy, I remember going, couldn't he just do a handstand there on the ground? You can't grab the atmosphere. That's the sky up there that he's pushing. And I've been looking for that for years on YouTube, and I can't find it. So if anybody can help me.
You're not alone. I seem to have that same kind of memory, and then bumping on that also kind of being like, Yeah. Why can't he just, you know, push down? Like,
email address is in the show notes, folks. But that was our top five. What were your favorite Saturday morning cartoons? Which shows left a lasting impression? And which ones do you still think about today? Let me know. The email is growingupgeekpodcast@gmail.com. Wayne, I want to thank you for coming on the show. Tell everybody where they can find you and where they can find Flip City.
Man, thank you so much for having me. This has been a total blast. This is my dream topic. I love this topic so much. You can find us at the Flip City Podcast. We are just two geek best friends, me and Greg Goslin, who is my co-host. We love to come together and talk about geek culture, pop culture, talking about, you know, all things retro. And we want to bring you the retro radness twice a month. And so we do that through the Flip City Podcast. We are Ghostbusters fans, Star Wars fans, all things pro wrestling and thereon. And so if you just want to hang out with a couple of nerdy dudes who just love to talk about all things, you know, from the past, come on down and join us. You can find us at Flip City Podcast. So everywhere on social media, you can find us there at Flip City Podcast. You can also pull us up on every podcast player and do that. If you're lazy, you just want it all in one link, you can just go to flipcitypodcast.com.net. I do this every time, even in our episodes, flipcitypodcast.net, and you can pull up all of our links and check them out there. And, you know, we got several episodes in already. We love doing the drafts. We love doing our top fives. We also just kind of like shooting the breeze. We during the holiday season, we did the Trio of Terror. During Christmas, we did the Triple Jingle. And so it's just a lot of fun. Come and join us, flipcitypodcast.net.
Awesome. Thanks, Wayne. Next time on Growing Up Geek, well, it's actually going to be a bit of a wait because I'm taking a break so that I can gear up for what's coming up next. But hey, don't worry. I'll be back with season 2 in 2025. And trust me, folks, it's going to be worth the wait because we're going to leave behind the sugar-filled bliss of Saturday mornings and set out on an epic journey through the realms of fantasy. Season 2 is all about exploring the magic, the wonder, and the wild imagination that shaped so many of our childhoods. From animated dragons and tabletop adventures to sword-swinging heroes and spellbinding stories, we'll travel through the enchanted worlds that lived in our books, our comics, and on our screens. In other words, this break is a good thing because it's going to allow you, dear listener, to prepare yourself mentally for one truly epic season as I dive into the timeline of my own fantasy journey. And we're going to kick it all off in the late 70s when I was introduced to a little fella with hairy feet. From there, I'll take you through the 80s and 90s as I discovered new worlds, unforgettable characters, and stories that have since set up permanent residence in my heart. So sharpen your swords, gather your party, and prepare for adventure. Because when Growing Up Geek returns, we're going to embark on a fantasy quest like no other. Until then, may your dice roll true and may your imagination take you to places you've never dreamed. Season 2 is coming, folks, and it's going to be one magical ride. Thanks for listening. Bye. I want to thank you for listening to this episode of Growing Up Geek. Questions and comments can be directed to growingupgeekpodcast@gmail.com. If you enjoyed the show, you can help to boost our presence online by leaving a rating or review on your favorite podcast app. I also invite you to join our subscription program, Stephen or Else Beyond, and in return, you'll get episodes of Growing Up Geek early and ad-free. Check out the link in the show notes, or just go to growingupgeekpodcast.com to sign up today. Growing Up Geek is a presentation of Stephen or Else Media. For more nerdy content hosted by me, check out StephenRElse.com.
Holy harvest, Batman! Good to be out in the country. Batman! Robin!
Hi, Mr. Brown. Robin and I were hoping we could buy a snack. This is the place to get some great ones.
Be my guest.
Apples, tomatoes, celery, it all looks good to me.
Right, Robin. Fresh fruits and vegetables make some of the best snacks there are.
What do we have, Batman?
Any of them, Robin. You can't miss.
That hits the spot. Better than junk food, Robin.
I just don't think I can move through life knowing that a guy named Steven did this to me.
How could you let this happen, Steven?
Your podcast sucks.
Hail to the king, baby.
Steven! Thank God. I had a horrible feeling I was going to be the only one here.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.